Case for argument, Hartford Casualty v. Carlin Fleischer. Mr. Brown.
May
you two are brothers, are you?
At least if we are, we weren't at the last holiday dinner together, but maybe he's my long-lost brother.
The resemblance is almost knockout.
Uh-oh. I don't know. Is that a compliment to either one of us?
I think you're both gorgeous.
Probably not.
Your Honors, I think the issue in this case is what is the purpose of the employee benefit liability insurance coverage? Is it meant to cover the nature of the employee benefit, or is it meant to cover the consequences of the act of the insured in administering those employee benefit plans? The underlying opinion in Hartford argues that it is the nature of the obligation that controls the determination of whether there's a duty to defend in this case. We argue that it is the consequences of the employer's act in administering those employee benefit plans. And the error in the reasoning that it's the nature of the obligation that determines whether they're coverage, I think, is demonstrated. If you look at the example in the Baylor case that the court suggested might be a circumstance in which there would be coverage.
But you don't have coverage for breach of contract. Isn't that what's involved here, a breach of contract?
But any employee benefit is the result or arises out of the contractual obligation between the employer and the employee. You have no independent right.
But you don't buy insurance against a breach of contract for obvious reasons, because then you just breach your contracts, break your contracts with abandon, since you were insured against any being sued, you know, for breach of the contract.
Right.
So you're not arguing that.
No.
So where's the negligence as opposed to just the breach of a contract?
The negligence arises out of the act of the employer in administering that contractual obligation that you have to look at. Otherwise, there would never be insurance in this case. And the risk that the courts address is the intentional...
But you don't want to say that every breach of contract is the result of negligence. Because then every breach of contract becomes insured. Which you can't have that, right?
That's correct. But the insurance company has to look at the actions that cause the breach, because the risk, the moral risk in the case law talks about what happens if there's an intentional breach. That's what the reasoning in those cases is asserting that they're protecting against. But that could arise with any insurance. I have my homeowner's insurance. If I burn my house down, right, it's not covered.
Well, what is the negligent act here?
It's the failure of our clients to maintain the records necessary to defend themselves against the claim of the plaintiff in the underlying case to the vacation and...
So you bought insurance against failure to maintain your own records?
If it was done negligently, that's correct.
That doesn't sound right.
Well, but look at the example.
You have no, then you can be a totally clumsy and incompetent firm, and you say, well, I don't have to be careful because I'm insured. That doesn't sound right.
Well, if it's negligent conduct. So what the example in Baylor...
It doesn't sound right. It sounds fishy. You're saying a company says, well, I don't have to worry about details, paying people, anything of that stuff. I'm insured. I'm careless. Of course I know I'm careless. I like to be careless because I'm insured, so it doesn't cost me anything to be careless.
But if
it
you...
It doesn't sound right, does it? If doesn't you, that sound goofy? Really goofy?
I don't think so because...
You're kidding.
No. Extend the analysis to the example of
You are rewarding carelessness, sloppiness. You say, we don't care about our records. We don't care. Overpay, underpay, doesn't matter. Insurance pays for it. No insurance company is going to write insurance, slobs.
But the example in the Baylor...
You go to Hartford and say, look, I really need insurance against negligence because I don't know how to manage a business. I'm constantly making mistakes. Will you please insure me? I don't see that conversation.
But the examples for this insurance, including the one in the Baylor case, which is the failure to enroll a person in a pension plan, or the example in the marketing materials for these types of insurance is the failure to enroll someone in a health insurance plan, is not materially different than your example. And if that's covered, then my client's failure to maintain those records should be covered as well. Because you look at the consequences of their acts in determining what the insurance coverage is.
That's what you just said is the gist of your argument in its entirety, isn't it?
It is.
Okay. Either we agree with you or disagree with you.
That's correct.
So?
An additional issue that was raised was the language for
I knew it was too good to be true. Go ahead.
Well, I want to address the exclusionary language as well that's referred to by Hartford. Again, the way the exclusionary language reads, we think, creates an ambiguity because it says to form any obligation or fulfill any guarantee with respect to the payment of benefits. So anything in the administration of the employee benefit plan would fall within that definition, or at least that definition could be used to deny any type of coverage. Therefore, we don't think the exclusion can be the basis for denying the insurance company's obligation to provide a defense, because it would make the coverage illusory.
Do you have a case like this?
With respect to the exclusionary language? No.
Well, there's always got to be a first.
There always has to be a first, correct, Your Honor.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Mr. Brown. Mr. Duffy?
Good morning. May it please the court, Michael Duffy on behalf of the plaintiff appellee Hartford. I think the court has kind of seized upon the issue, and the way that the Hartford views the issue presented is the virtually identical issue to the case presented in Baylor. This is a case in which an insured is seeking insurance benefits for a claim made against them for wages under a written employee benefit contract. That's what Ronald Fleischer's case was about against them when they settled it. The allegations of supposed negligence really are irrelevant as concerns the duty to defend, because as counsel for the putative insureds has admitted, it is a negligence that they were going to try to use as a defense, essentially, to Ronald's claim. Essentially, what they're arguing is we didn't keep any records about whether or not we paid this guy, and that was negligent on our behalf. And so, therefore, Hartford, you have to pay this man the wages that we told him we were going to pay him. I mean, that is really an outrageous situation and would require this court, I think,
You can keep calm. You don't have to be outraged.
I'm an Irishman, so I get worked up over stuff
like
this.
So am I. An abiding sense of guilt that goes with it.
Yes, there is. There is. But it really gets to the point that is, if your honors are going to rule in favor of the policyholders here, you really have to reverse the Baylor case. Because Baylor says specifically that an agreement to pay something under a written agreement can never provide a duty or provide a duty that can sustain a negligence cause of action. It's not possible. That's what Baylor says. And so if your honors are going to do anything about and find coverage for the putative insureds here, you'd have to reverse Baylor.
Mr. Duffy, can I talk to you about Hartford's response here?
I'm sorry?
Can I talk to you about Hartford's response to the inquiry?
Sure.
My notes indicate they contacted Hartford on September 25th of 2013 to inform them of the suit and obviously seeking coverage. Hartford doesn't respond till February 4th. And the way I read this, you didn't respond, you didn't take any action until settlement was imminent. Now, you know, the insurance code speaks to this kind of conduct. Do you want to respond to that?
Well, I think that, first of all, there was, with respect to the Illinois insurance code, there was never a bad faith cause of action pled against the Hartford whatsoever. And so the Illinois insurance code, frankly, is an irrelevancy with respect to this case.
You don't think that the fees that were incurred during this delay should at all fall to Hartford's expense?
Yes, if in fact there is a duty to defend, and that is kind of the point. So what the policyholders have argued here is that we should be stopped from contesting an obligation to defend based upon the fact that we filed a lawsuit, you know, a few days before they actually went into mediation of the underlying case. Now, my understanding of the underlying case at that point, too, was that they had filed a motion to dismiss, which is in the record here, concerning whether or not they had joined all the necessary parties, etc. The underlying case had not proceeded very far at all, and that the law on estoppel is it only applies to whether or not an insurer is stopped from denying an indemnity obligation, not a defense obligation. And I think the law is pretty clear that even if you accept the timeline here, it's 6 or 7 months between the time of the tender and the time of the filing of the lawsuit. And that time period is entirely reasonable based on multiple precedents. So I don't think that estoppel has any applicability here with respect to whether or not we have an obligation or we can deny a defense obligation and set forth those matters within the pleadings. It can't create that obligation. And then, moreover, even if it could, which it doesn't, we filed within a sufficient period of time. And the fact that they settled the underlying case really rather swiftly, since it wasn't even at issue, does not make the delay, or if you call it a delay, the time period unreasonable. So that's Hartford's position with respect to that.
You didn't respond until you learned about the mediation, right?
No, I think we did respond before that time. I think there was a response prior to that time.
I guess my notes hadn't.
I'm sorry. I believe that it was.
My reading was that you you turned to the issue when you found out about the mediation.
No, there was a discussion. There were discussions actually between myself and counsel for the insureds prior to that time, with them wanting us to contribute toward a settlement that they may be negotiating in the mediation. And in point of fact, you know, we had offered a very small amount of money toward that to avoid this litigation.
Mr. Duffy, when would you say you first made contact with Mr. Brown?
Truthfully, my recollection would be, you know, it would have been a few weeks prior to the mediation. And it wouldn't have been with Mr. Brown. It was with some other lawyer who
I didn't mean to identify him other than I thought that he might be the contact. It just seemed to me that kind of a long time for the insurance company to at least state its position to the firm.
Well, but as I said, even if you take in the time period between the time of the tender and the time of the filing of the lawsuit, there's nothing to indicate that that time period is unreasonable, and that's the standard. There's multiple cases which have held longer time periods to be reasonable. And so, you know, given those facts, and you know, if there was an obligation to defend, certainly we would have been required to reimburse the defense costs incurred from the date of tender, and I don't think there's any dispute about that. However, there's no duty to defend in the first instance because this case is nothing more than somebody coming in and saying, hey, I've got this bill to pay, and I agreed to pay it in writing, and I've refused to pay it, but I want you to pay it for me. And that's not a negligent act, error, or omission in the administration of an employee benefit plan. I mean, taken to its illogical conclusion, every commercial dispute in which an insurer decides he or she doesn't want to pay somebody a sum that they've agreed to pay becomes an insurable event because I decide not to keep records.
Well, it's not an outside vendor supplying IT equipment. It's an employee. It's a little closer to the benefits, wouldn't you say, than just not paying the rent?
Well, it is an employee, but it is a contract, and yeah, it is an amount that they agreed upon. And this really is a wage dispute. You know, they've agreed to pay a wage to this man for vacation and sick time over a period of years. I mean, there is an Illinois Wage Act count here, but it's entirely based upon and there has to be an employment contract breach before there's a statutory obligation here. So the entire case is, in fact, really seeking coverage for something that is almost, you know, an immoral hazard, in effect. So we believe that the district court was entirely correct in following Baylor, and that the court should affirm that decision in its entirety. Any further questions, Your Honor? I see my time is running low.
Thank you, Mr. Duffy.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Brown, anything further?
I think what we're asking the court to do is really reconcile two cases, the Baylor case and the Kruger case. The Kruger case uses the analysis we used and talks about sort of the broad prohibition against holding that.
See, you're opening quite a can of worms because it must be that many breaches of contract are involuntary, are the result of carelessness in a firm. But people can't buy insurance against a breach of contract because it would encourage carelessness. Right? I owe you money. I don't have to worry about it. I have to pay. I'm insured. You just can't have that.
But and I get back to that whole point. Isn't it carelessness not to enroll?
You can't have that. You cannot allow people to relax all their controls, all their care on a contract on the theory that carelessness in administering a contract is insurable, because then nobody's going to be careful.
Then the coverage is illusory because all the employees
benefits. It's not illusory because there are loads of other things like traffic accidents and so on for which the insurance is designed. The plant burns down. Workers are injured. That's not the same as, you know, owing money to someone and saying, well, I don't have to worry about paying that person because I'm insured.
But
don't you see the implications of your position?
I do, but the insurance covers the employee benefit, which is the contractual benefit, whether it's pension benefit, health insurance benefit, or the vacation benefits, which we're talking about in this particular case. If you say that those benefits all arise out of the employment contract, then this insurance would never cover any circumstance in which those benefits weren't paid by an employer.
Take comfort in the fact that you've made your position well known.
Right. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel.